Welcome back to another episode of Underground Antics. I'm Shane Pockroy, and today we have a very special guest. It is the great Mr. Rock, Ross MacPhail. Sorry, Rock.
It's all right.
And I'm very excited to talk to you today. So you've been doing a lot of work over the last few years on helping, well, I guess, one, yourself, but other people find authenticity through in their lives, and your particular focus has been on the retirement portion of a person's life and what it means for people to go into retirement and how they navigate that to get the most out of it and not, you know, as we've had in that discussion before, not let retirement happen to you. It's about going into life with it's an approach to life of having a zest for thriving and enjoying yourself and really coming to life in any age, but particularly, you know, in your that later half of your life. And so we've got a lot to talk about today. And so thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure. I actually listened to a few of your podcasts recently, and I feel honored to be part of it. Yeah, I was conducting workshops particularly for retiring police officers. And during that time, I was listening to them, learning more about it, doing a lot of studies on retirement, aging, and neuroplasticity and things. And one of the things that struck me is that we were talking about the emotional impact of retirement and realized that a lot of times it had to do with our mental health. When I looked at it, every time I looked up the word mental health, it talked about things like depression, anxiety, stress. And I'm thinking, well, where's the good part? So right. I changed it and I started talking about how we create mental wealth. And one of the keys to mental wealth is whether we create authenticity. And I'll explain what I mean by that in a moment.
Okay.
One of the things that happens is that I was thinking about this whole thing yesterday and realized that, you know, when you get on an airplane, they're always telling you if something happens, the oxygen mask will drop down. And if you're with a child, make sure you put your own mask on before you help your child.
Right.
And it almost seems...
Sort yourself out.
It almost seems opposite to what you should be doing and what you always think of. But it is critical that if we don't take care of ourselves, if I can't breathe, then likelihood is I'm not going to be able to take care of somebody. So the whole idea I have around as we age and retire is we're not going to start to focus on ourselves. One of the things that happens is that people go into retirement with different ideas, and how that turns out over time really varies. I'll give you an example. I have a friend named Eric. Eric is now about 87 years old. And we would get together with a group and walk our dogs. And I would see Eric 3 or 4 times a month. And then he moved and I saw a little less of him. But I was always excited when Eric was going to be part of the group because we would go for the walk and then we'd all get together for breakfast.
Nice.
Eric had traveled all over the world. He made complex deals all over the place. She was a fascinating person to be around. And it didn't seem to matter what I was going to talk about. He would have some fascinating input towards it. So I was always excited when he was going to be there. And I was, about 3 years ago, I was making some changes to the retirement workshop and aging, and I thought I'm going to get some input from Eric. When I talked to him, he says, I'm really excited that you've contacted me and you want me involved. He said, because he says, well, just about a year ago, I was talking to my son-in-law, and Eric was 84 at the time. He said to his son-in-law, I've reached the age of irrelevance. And knowing Eric, it just struck me, it just dumbfounded me that he of all people should feel irrelevant. and that anybody should feel relevant. And that really started to change the way I looked at the work that I was doing in retirement, because I realized that a lot of people, when they retire, at some point will reach those stages when they stop feeling relevant. And there's a number of reasons for that.
Sure.
So I started looking at it, and because one of the things that's difficult in retirement, if we just look at the word, retire means to leave. You know, somebody leaves the field of battle, I'm going to retire for the evening, I'm going to retire a debt. And so the focus has always been on what I'm leaving. And when we think about it, is that what our life is? You know, if a lot of times you go to a social gathering and you'll meet somebody and you'll say to them, what do you do? He says, well, I'm a retired police officer. Mm-hmm. I'm a retired accountant, as if that's who they are.
Right.
And there's so much more to them. And does that mean that the rest of your life is defined by what you did before? Is that who you want to be for the rest of your life? And it always surprises me to some degree, because I know people who will say that if you get into conversation about what they did, they didn't really like what they did for a living. They did it because they had to make money, and they got through it, and they were so happy to leave. You know, one of the things when we retire is, what are we looking forward to? And some of it is, for a lot of people, it's, what are we leaving? Because that's what I really want to do. I want to stop working. I want to stop what I'm doing. But yet, when they retire, they still refer to themselves as, that's what their occupation was, even though they hated it.
Yeah.
You start to look and say, well, if that's what you did, who are you becoming? And a lot of people will talk about reinventing themselves. Mm-hmm. And I always looked at it, no, you're going to find out who you really are, that passion that you have. So we spend a lot of time in talking to people that are going either about to retire or in retirement about what is it they really want? What is it? What meaning and purpose are they looking for? And one of the things that happens also is that at this time, people are unique in the history of mankind. You know, somebody said 3/4 of the people who are over the age of 60, that over the age of 65 are alive today in the history of mankind. This is also a time when, for the first time in history, people will be retired longer than they worked. You spend all this time building a career, working towards something, and yet when we retire, we just kind of stop.
Right.
You know, so
it's very interesting. Yeah, like, because just on that point, it's like, I mean, there's a few points, right? The first point is that it's true. I think it's very true that people often define themselves by the work that they do, right? And not by the person that they are, right? And there's good and bad reasons for that. And you know, as you say, like, what happens when that ends is that people find out they don't really know who they are, or they keep hold of something that they thought they were, right? Instead of seeing what's available and happening to them right now, and just being the person that they are, and you know, doing whatever kind of things would make you happy or give you the most fulfillment and meaning, right? And I think that you're right in the sense of, there is this sense in our culture where it's like you kind of grow up in the somewhat, you know, misguided paradigm of how to live life is that, oh, you know what, you go to school and then you go to university so that you can get a job, so that you can get a house, so that you can, you know, have a family. And then when you reach 65 or whatever, you get to retire and then you can start enjoying your life, right? Which is a very strange, like, way of viewing things. But I mean, it makes sense to some degree, you know, like, that's just how a lot of people experience their lives, but it's not necessarily the best way to do it. It's just how it often comes out. I mean, you know, even when you're like super young, like at your first job, you know, they're already talking about like RSPs and retirement funds and how to set yourself up for retirement 40 or 50 years ahead of time. And you don't, I mean, it's so crazy to like try and think about that. Cause I mean, like for me, when they were doing that, like for me, I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, it makes sense to me when you obviously explain the math out and you do want to prepare for your future and those kinds of things. So I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but I was like, I don't even know what I want in 5 years from now or 10 years from now. Like to think that far ahead is just, I mean, it just goes a bit beyond me, but that's a separate issue. I'm not taking up like argument with RRSPs, but
there is a fascinating part to that when people look at retirement, so much of it is focused on financial wealth. That's what most of the financial people talk about. What is your wealth? What is your portfolio? Will you have enough money when you retire? And when you're at that stage, can I manage that money? But we never spend the real time looking at how do we build mental wealth, the kind of assets that will serve us, the kind of things that make us happy. As you said, we can go through the motions and waiting for that time we can finally retire, and then we're there. And maybe it's the idea that it's wonderful as a man that I knew retired years ago. He was 55 at the time, and he went to one of those workshops run by one of the big accounting firms, and they were going on, and he stopped them. He said, you know, gentlemen, you're obviously a lot smarter than I am, but my idea of retirement is I'm going to plan all kinds of things and then not do any of them. Because the first time in his life, he didn't have to.
Right.
But even within that, you know, people will look and say, God, I get to play golf when I want. I get to travel when I want. Well, first of all, most of us don't have enough money to travel 12 months of the year. Yeah. And we may get bored with that. But the other side of it is that when you can have a great trip that lasts 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But what happens the other 49 weeks of the year?
Right.
Are we getting anything out of that? And so much of it tends to be around a few things that we don't always feel fulfilled. So we lose that sense of relevance because who really needs us?
Yeah. And actually on that point, it's interesting that, you know, you brought up this idea of feeling relevant, right, and needed in society. And I think that our culture for the most part today has really done a poor job of that. I mean, there's kind of a sense of like, you know, there's the retirement villages and like that's where you put the old people and then you don't have to think about them or whatever. And it's so weird because there's so much wisdom and like a wealth of personality and greatness that, you know, a lot of people have at that age. I mean, like old cultures or some cultures, I suppose, still today, like elders is one of the highest like social statuses in a community, right? Are the people who have that experience. And it's not that they did something great or necessarily, or that they, you know, built an empire or something like that. It's that there's some great essence about that. And, you know, for people to feel irrelevant, it also, you know, it can make a lot of sense. Like if you have kids who are adults and have busy lives and things go on and, you know, they're working like hectic hours and busy with their own families, and then they don't spend as much time with you as you would like or as they would like necessarily, and everyone kind of feels bad about it, but there's not enough action to rectify it or anything like that. And then I'm sure it's a horrible feeling to reach that point where you don't feel like important in the world anymore.
And some of it is that we're so used to being, we work, we have deadlines, we have things we have to accomplish. So we're dealing with all the things that are required of us. And then it suddenly stops. And as I would say to people, you know, 4 or 5 years after you retire, 6 years, depending on the individual, you get up one Wednesday morning, at least you think it's Wednesday because you're not keeping track of days anymore. And you realize the most important thing you're going to do today is clean the toilets. And that's when you start to realize that people don't need you. There's nobody asking you for anything. And, you know, right. part of that's great. But the other side of it is there any reason I'm getting up on Monday morning? What am I excited yeah. about today? For the most part, I'm not excited about anything. And that's so much of what happens. I look at retirement in some ways that what happens to us is it reminded me of being in grade 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. Roughly June 28th, 29th would come along, and I'm last day of school. And it's particularly exciting. I grew up in Timmins, which northern part of Ontario. And at the end of June, it's kind of summer now. It's warm out. There's less to do. You know, it's exciting to be outside. So you leave school and you're just so excited that I'm finally done with it. And you find all kinds of things you can do with your friends. And you're running around. You know, with kids, we experiment with things. We do different things. We're playing different games. And it's just going along great. And then early middle of August, we start to go around looking outside. Well, who are we going to play with today? What are we going to do that's different that I haven't done 43 times in the last couple of weeks, whatever it is. And I realized that I didn't necessarily want to go back to school. I wasn't an incredible student, so I wasn't necessarily looking forward to it. But at the same time, I was looking for something different than just being there. It was just now I was getting a stage of end of August that I'm getting bored with doing nothing. And that's what happens to people when they retire. There's expectations that this freedom is going to be so great. But if I don't use it for anything, it starts to be a hindrance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, with that freedom, as you say, there are two options that, or maybe there's a few more, but the options that really like appear to me is it's like, okay, well, now you have the opportunity to do what you want to do. Are you going to do it? Right? And that's a difficult choice for a lot of people to make, just because doing new things and change and challenges, it's hard. And if you don't have to do it, you know, often the motivation like doesn't necessarily match up. If you do, then, you know, you get the benefit of the reward and the positive emotions and the things that come with it, despite the challenges that may come, right? But on the other hand, you could end up just doing nothing. And then, in a sense, I guess actually even with the like group of people who do nothing most of the time, there's some who will enjoy it and just, you know, appreciate just being there and just living despite the lack of action in their lives. But I think that most people probably won't, and they'll get bored and they will get frustrated and possibly depressed. And, you know, things will, as you say, like you can't be on vacation permanently. It doesn't work. Yeah, like our minds are set up to not like that kind of thing.
Yeah, whatever we have, I think that sometimes one of the difficulties being that we go back to it, when we're children, our parents are telling us what to do.
Yeah.
We get teenagers, we rebel a little bit, we're still under the control, and then we may go to university, we got a professor, and the school system again controlling what it is we're doing. We start working, we have bosses that tell us what to do. We get somebody else in our lives that may, again, influence that. We spend most of our lives being told what to do.
Yeah.
And then it stops. And also what happens is that, you know, the pandemic, in a sense, we look at something where we've had to wear masks to protect ourselves. But people, as we've gone through businesses, et cetera, through our careers, we also wear masks at work. Mm-hmm. We protect ourselves. You know, people will talk about, you shouldn't be talking that way because it may be a career limiting action on your part.
Yeah.
So we tend to protect ourselves around other people. And when we spend a lot of time doing that, when we finally reach that stage that we're in control, we have lost a lot of who we are. And part of what we're looking at when we're trying to find that passion is to better understand ourselves. And that's the journey that I spend a lot of time looking at, helping people really figure out, who am I? Because for the first time in their lives, they control their own destiny. Mm-hmm. And not everybody does much with that. I can control it, but where do I take it? What is it that I am passionate about? And what am I good at? And people really struggle with trying to figure out exactly what that looks like and what's going to make me feel good.
Right. So, and on that journey, it's like sometimes you're going to end up doing a lot of things that you don't like in order to find out what you do like or what you are passionate about. But what comes with that is a lot of, you know, unpleasant experiences, you could say, or disappointments or what have you. But the opportunity presents itself, and for a lot of people it's a big struggle to know what to make of it, but especially because there's so many options. And as you say, like, you lose yourself if you focus too much on what other people are telling you to do or what other people tell you you should do, or even what you think you should be doing to please other people, right? It's kind of like two sides of the same coin. And so, but do you think, so I've got a question. So do you think that people, when they, you know, do those kinds of things, do you think that they lose who they are, or is it just like losing touch or losing sight with who you are authentically? And then you just rediscover it, but it's there the whole time. It's just covered up by your thoughts about it.
I think more of it's there all the time. Mm-hmm. If we look back, you know, in some cases we can look back at the things we might have done as a child. Mm-hmm. We just played. We discovered. And out of that, we found things we liked and we disliked. But then we tended to become too regimented. And because society, the business world, whatever it is, dictated a lot of things to us, we kind of moved away from that whole idea of getting excited about new ideas or learning more about ourselves.
Yeah.
Because people weren't necessarily interested.
So it
is,
I think
more of it is that it's there. We just have to uncover. That's why I would say that I don't believe that we reinvent ourselves. We just find out who we really are and find out the things that we can be passionate about that we've neglected for years.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So let's go here for a sec. So how do you teach people to go about, like, discovering who you are and finding passion? Like, how do you present that to people?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of things that take place. First of all is to help people understand that this is, you're controlling your own destiny.
Yeah.
You now have that choice. There's nobody there telling you what you have to do. So open yourself up to understanding more about yourself. So one of the things we would ask people as an example is, when you leave work, mm-hmm. if you're in a pre-retirement stage, what are you going to miss? And it's surprising that when you ask that question, people tend to kind of look at you blankly. I don't know, what am I going to miss? You know, eventually people will talk about they'll miss some of the work. They'll miss the structure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eventually somebody always says, I'll miss the people.
Yeah.
And the question I have for them is, will you miss them all? And it's always, everybody laughs when you say that. The answer is always, no, I'm not going to miss everybody. But what
some
is it about
suck.
The people that you are going to miss?
Yeah.
What is the characteristics they have? What is it that makes you feel good being around them? Because that helps better understand a little bit of who we are. I'll give you an example of one of the things that would happen.
Yeah.
Is that in learning about myself, I talked about the walking group and we'd get together for breakfast. And loved having conversation with Eric because mm-hmm. they tended to be deep conversations and that stimulated my mind. One day, one of the friends had somebody come in with a baby. And they started talking about how the baby had long legs and a short torso. And people went around the room and they started talking about, oh, Bill's got, really has really long legs. And Jim over there, he's got a short torso. And they're going on. And I'm looking at it. I said, would you just shoot me now? Yeah. Because it's not something that engaged me. Yeah. Wonderful people. And it's fine that they went in that direction. But I understood something about myself from going through that, that
right.
I needed, if I'm going to be happy, I need those deep conversations.
Right.
I need to understand more about what's going on around me. And I want to debate things. Now, other people may not have that drive.
Sure.
But that's the kind of thing. I'm looking at what kind of people do I like to be around?
Yeah.
What is it that when I did work that I liked?
Mm-hmm.
Other question might be, what is your signature? What is it that people would say that's you? So it might be that somebody would say, I'm really good at organizing things. I'm really good at analyzing things. I am personally, I'm great at taking complex ideas and breaking them down into more simplistic forms.
Sure.
That tells us something about what is going to excite us going forward. So we have to look at the past. You know, what kinds of games did you play as a kid? What did you do?
Right.
So the more we can start to look at who we are, the kind of things that we like to do.
Yeah.
Because we probably ignored a lot of it. And sometimes I would say to people that you may not come up with the answer today, but you've got to start exploring it.
Yeah. You know, have it in your mind to think about.
You know, it's conversations that you may have with your family. I may think I'm a certain way or act a certain way. My family reminds me, no, you don't do it that way. You tend to be like this. Yeah. That, again, tells me something about me. And the more I can explore it, and I think that it also comes that we will, somebody may go off and say, you know, I've always been interested in painting.
Mm-hmm.
So they go and take a course on painting. They start doing some painting and discover that I really don't like this very much.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Never really realized it before, but I finally got to do it. And I realized this isn't as much fun as I thought I would. Going into the details drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I can't sit still that long. You know, so somebody may also take up, you know, I was talking to a woman and she had taken up photography. It wasn't something she thought she'd ever be interested in. And she ended up focusing on taking pictures of birds. It's the last thing she thought she'd want to do. But until we kind of go and examine some things, try some things, you know, what is it about painting that I didn't like that may tell me, okay, this takes me closer to the kind of thing that I should be doing. If I know a friend, a retired teacher, that loves to read. And she's reading all the time, but she'll say occasionally, I'm getting tired of reading. And part of it is because that's all she's doing.
Right.
So now
it's a bit of moderation.
How do I get beyond that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that what's good there is for people to have that level of self-awareness where when you're engaging in or either looking retrospectively in things you've done in the past or whatever and seeing what did you enjoy about it? What meant the most to you? And then how do you extrapolate that and, you know, do it, transfer it into something in the present or in the future or something like that? And you need to have that awareness to be able to say, I don't like this or this doesn't feel how I thought it would. And then to, you know, have the courage to be like, okay, well, it's fine. Like you win some, you lose some. I tried it and I learned. And so now I'm going to try something else. Right. And maybe I won't like that, but maybe I will. And who knows, you know, like the lady who, who the ornithology lady that you just mentioned, like she would, who would have thought that she would have been, you know, taking pictures of birds for hours on end, but she, once she tried it and she figured out she loved it, I mean, it's a game changer, right?
Yeah.
And what's interesting to like circle back to the other point about when children have freedom and they just play to learn, right? They're not concerned about whether they're going to like it or what it's going to mean for their future, or, you know, how other people are going to necessarily see them. I mean, there's a little bit of that as they grow up, but for the most part, it's just, I just want to explore the world and see what brings me joy and see what's fun to be a part of and socializing with other people. And it's true freedom. And in that, you're right, like that's how you find what means the most to you and what's the most important thing to you. And then once you do find that, you don't want to overdo it, because then you'll get bored of that and then you'll want to be doing something else, right? So there's like a whole balance game that you have to figure out how to play for yourself.
Yeah, I think there's things that we learn and we discover other things we may also like.
Yeah.
When we look at it, because when I talk to people, when we talk about the fact that you're the CEO of the rest of your life, you control your destiny. So what is that destiny actually going to look like? Because when I ask them, people typically, how far out do you plan? Because of the way we live our lives, we tend to plan very short term. Mm-hmm. Might be a couple of months. The only long-term planning we might be doing is what the vacation could look like a year from now.
Yeah.
Or a year and a half from now. But when you look at it from another perspective, a CEO has to think out much further. They start planning 15, 20 years, because they've got to get their organization ready to deal with what their vision is going to look like, where they're taking the organization. And to a degree, that's what we have to do as individuals. I would say to somebody, okay, what is your vision? Look forward to yourself. You're 83 years old. What do you want your life to look like?
Yeah.
And generally speaking, everybody, there's, again, blank stares. What do you mean, 83? Why am I thinking about 83? And somebody will mention, say, well, I want to be healthy.
Yeah.
Or I want to be able to travel. I said, okay. Now let's take that word healthy, because it's a little fuzzy. What do you mean by being healthy? Because we all can have different definitions of health. So I said, first of all, you have to kind of, with the vision, is kind of be able to figure out what that really looks like. What am I going to be doing? What am I going to be feeling like? And why we do that is because it's not critical that we always think so far away. But one of the things that takes place is that if I wanted to be healthy and that meant that I could, you know, walk 10 kilometers at 83 years old and feel good about it, I could bounce my children, you know, grandchildren around. That means that there's a level of fitness mentally, physically, that I may have to accomplish. What we tend to do is allow that to just go along, as opposed to saying, if I want to be healthy at 83, what am I going to be doing at 57 and 63 and 72 that's going to make sure that I'm able to do those kind of things? So the vision is just kind of creating what your world would, you'd like to be. And that, again, helps us start to look at things we should be doing.
Right. It's creating a map for yourself.
Yes.
And it's interesting that you talk about mental wealth and, you know, how to build it, because it is, whether it's financial or mental or whatever, or physical wealth, I guess you could say, to reach a high level, it takes a lot of little steps that you got to take from a long time in advance in order to reach it, right? And if you want to be, you know, financially wealthy, you got to start making smart financial decisions from the beginning, or, you know, at every point. It doesn't just go 0 to 100. If you want to be in good physical shape, it's going to take a while. It's not going to be 3 weeks at the gym, right? You got to learn how to really make the most and get the best out of your body and what exercises work for you and what don't for you. And, you know, you'll probably suffer a few injuries along the way, and so you'll have to deal with that. And there'll be setbacks. And but ultimately, you know, having that goal in mind, or at least some version of it that you keep alive as you move through the map, that's what will keep you on track, right? It's like, so you need to know where you're going and then how to get there. And then you go on the journey knowing that most likely things are going to change on the journey and your goal's going to shift. But it's fine that that's happening, because you're just shifting where you're aiming. Or even if you redo it completely, it's at least some progress forwards, right? It's not just speculation of some like romanticized version of your life in any capacity, right? That you just wish to happen.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that comes out of all that is critical to retirement. And I guess when we looked at, I was listening to Debbie Hoffman talk about Viktor Frankl.
Yeah.
You know, and basically saying life doesn't owe us pleasure, it owes us meaning.
Yeah.
And so some of it, we look at all of that and recognize that part of what happens and why people become bored and their lives become stagnated is that they haven't found any meaning and purpose. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what happens is that we imagine or think that our purpose has to be grandiose, that I have to accomplish something huge.
Right.
And it may not be that at all. It may be that I did some little things that made me feel good, made other people feel good. And that's what we're really trying to help people understand is, what is your purpose? Look, that's why we start to look in the future. You know, in some cases I would say to people, if you're going to write your legacy right now, what would it be? And that, again, is difficult for people, but it's we're saying, if I can look back at the life that I want to have, it gives me a better understanding of things that will make me happy,
right,
and things that won't make me happy. You know, it's the same thing. I could ask a couple to put down their vision and a kind of plan what they want their life to look like 20 years from now. And they would often be surprised that a couple that's been married for 30 years has two different plans.
Yeah.
There was a couple, the man retired first.
Okay.
And she kept working. And well, she was going to work two more years. So they had bought a house in the country. And while she was still working, he went up there and he was great at doing things. So he was fixing up the house, getting it ready. So finally, she's about a month away from retirement. She says, it's great because the house is now ready. And when you're retired, we can go up there. And she looked at him and she said, are you crazy? I don't want to live up in the country. I want to live in Toronto. He said, well, why did you have me working on the house for the last 2 years? She said, well, I thought I'd keep you busy.
Yeah.
But it is so common that we have different views of things.
Yeah.
But it is all of those things that we recognize, because part of what we have to recognize is retirement is also changing in the fact that we're going to live longer.
Yeah.
You know, they had in 1963, the Japanese government started giving out silver sake cups to everyone that turned 100. Mm-hmm. And that year they gave out 153 sake cups. 2018, they gave out 39,000. So it's just amazing that all these people are turning 100.
Yeah.
And for the most part they're turning 100 in relatively good health. So at one point we used to think, well, if I made it to 75, I have a short window, so maybe not doing much didn't matter.
Yeah.
But now I'm looking at something where I may be retired for 45 years.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with it?
That's pretty crazy.
And as you said, it's important that we recognize it may change along the way, but we're kind of built ourselves to say, okay, I enjoyed that for a while. Now I'm going to do this. We did things. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, it's what's strange about the concept of retirement. I mean, not I don't mean strange in a judgmental way. I just mean like in an interesting kind of way. Is that, you know, as we were saying in the beginning, it's like, well, what exactly are you retiring from? Are you retiring from life, or are you retiring from your job, right? And or does it mean you're retiring from working for a living, or does it mean you're retiring from having to make money, right? I think I would say that the goal of the so-called retirement goal is to have enough money to live the rest of your life the way you want to live it, which is not necessarily, you know, how everyone approaches it. But as a general perspective, it's like you're done with the working part of your life. But not everyone is, right? And you get some people who don't retire or don't want to retire, and they work till they die. And they love it, and they couldn't do anything else, right? I mean, I know someone who is, how old is he now? I think he's having his 90th birthday this year, and this guy is a billionaire, right? And he has so much money, and he just loves working. I mean, I don't know if he can stop working, but like that's just what he doesn't need to work. Absolutely, hasn't needed to work since he was like 40 or something like that, but. He's just continued to do it. And I mean, he just opened up a new business like this year. And I'm from my opinion, I'm like, hey man, what are you doing? Like, don't you just want to chill? Like, isn't that the point? But I check myself and I'm like, no, because that's what brings him fulfillment, is doing things. And, you know, he likes engaging with people and being in business and working and starting projects and exciting things. And there's up, you know, there's like the thrills of, investment and stock things. I don't know. That's my business knowledge. As you can see, it's very advanced.
I think that there's a difference, because we have these people that are so fulfilled for so much of their lives. There was a specialist on aging in Japan who said you should never retire. And he lived that way because he worked every day until he was 105. Okay. And he was happy with that. On the other side of it, we have people, you know, the average retired person in the United States or North America watches 7 hours of TV a day. Yeah. And when you think about it, not that there's not worthwhile things to be watching TV, you can learn a lot of things, but to think that you're spending the majority of your day like that. And, you know, I would say, particularly up until Mr. Trump left office, when CNN was on, people would sit there and watch CNN for 7 hours. And two things that are wrong.
Yeah.
One is that sitting, we now know, is not good for you, sitting that long. And on top of it, the commercials that were typically on CNN are all about taking these drugs, which a lot of people need.
Yeah.
But they sit there and talk about how happy you're going to be now that you have this drug, and then spend three quarters of the rest of the commercial telling you all the side effects. And you look at that and said, I'm listening to all the bad news that's going on, because the news that's reported isn't all about happiness.
Yeah.
I'm seeing, and I'm listening to these things about drugs. And you start to say to yourself, is that what our life is supposed to be? And it's easy to fall in that trap. They're saying that a study of nursing homes that showed that the majority of people spend half of their day doing nothing or doing passive things. Television, wonderful tool, but it's passive entertainment.
Yeah,
I'm not engaging my mind. And, you know, you get into that whole thing that when we start to look at the fact that we can live longer, do we want to live longer being alive, having strong mental capacities, physically we feel good about ourselves, we're not waking up with as many aches and pains. So we know that all the studies that are being done now, that if we're engaging our brain, you know, we slow down the possibilities of dementia.
Yeah.
You know, it may not stop it, but, you know, they've also seen examples of all kinds of people they've done autopsies on, where they open up their brains and discover it's riddled with taxane and tangles that they should have had been showing signs of Alzheimer's, but showed none. They're not 100% sure of why, but they do know that it is has a lot to do with how we use our brain.
Or not.
So it's not only that we find things that are purpose, it is those kind of things that keep us alive, that get us up in the morning, that get us excited about doing something, that engage our brains, get our bodies moving. You know, somebody wrote a book that said, you want to stay healthy as you're healthy, have a healthy life when you're retired or aging? Eat, drink, and move. It's that simple.
Yeah.
If you do all those right things.
Right.
You know, we tend to be, that's why I get it. I look at those things when I talk about planning and I talk about getting engaged. It's to stop being passive.
Right. And you've also made a really good point about, you know, it's one thing, there's the passivity of life and of a lot of people's existence. And I in fact don't even think that that's restricted to that age group. I think most people consume like some kind of media content for many hours a day, even if it's passively like listening to something while you're working or some or whatever, yeah, or studying or whatever it is, right? It's huge. I mean, I did that as well. Like, I'm not saying it's not me, but what I eventually figured out was that, and I've spoken to lots of people about this, is it's what are you filling your consciousness with, right? Like in terms of entertainment, just at least. Like, okay, let's say you're going to watch TV. Fine. Go for it. But now what kind of content are you going to be consuming? Is it going to be negative in that the whole world just gets portrayed as bad, right? Or are you watching things that are exciting and uplifting and positive and funny or whatever it is? Like, what world are you living in through your screen, right? And the news, like what you were mentioning, like at the moment, it's a pretty rough place. And it seems to be that when you do that for too much of the time, you start to see the world like that. Like, I have a really good, one of my good friends, she watches a lot of shows about murder, right? Like, what are they called? Like mass murderers throughout the ages and, you know, all kinds of things like that. I mean, it's funny. They call it murder porn, right? Not just because it's like people, like, they love that, the crime drama thriller action. And I was speaking to her and I was like, does it not make you think about murder like all day? Like, And she had to like think about it for a bit, and she was like, yes and no. She's like, it's definitely more prevalent than if I don't watch the shows, but it's not like, it's not too much. But what happens is you start seeing things like in scenarios in your everyday life where you'd be like, oh, I'd better, you know, lock that door. I better, you know, carry this with me just in case. Or you start to, your view of the world shifts. And if all you're consuming is like the news at the moment, I mean, that's bad. The world, it definitely seems like hell if you watch the news and think that that's the full representation of reality, right? It's super important. No, go ahead.
It's how we're engaging our brains, how the brain is working. Because it, you know, I always say to people, we're all going to get older, but aging is a choice. We make a decision for how we're going to age and the things we're going to go through based on what we're going to do. But also, when we think about it, when you asked earlier about how do you find out what you're passionate about, because we then explore. If I'm reading different ideas, I'm using TV because there's a documentary on climate change, or how psychedelics are helping people with depression. Now I'm learning something, and if I take that and I do more with it, now I'm engaged. Eric, who, you know, said that he reached the age of irrelevance, part of what happened is he had moved at that point to away from where most of his friends are. They were like an hour and a half away.
Right.
So he finally started to set up a new community. And this is part of what's critical, is that as we that the relationships we have, finding people that we relate to, that we can feel good about, that we trust. So Eric started to find other people in the area that were retired and discovered some people that were really interested in archaeology. He had built some interest, so he started doing more studying around it. So he moved from being feeling irrelevant just by getting engaged with new people and having conversations with them and learning new things about them, that he started studying different stuff and no longer feels irrelevant. He's looking forward to that conversation he could have with Jennifer down the street.
Yeah.
Because she's got some interest in some areas. So that's the kind of thing that changes in terms of how we use it. There was a, you know, studies that there's all kinds of brain games out there that are promoted.
Yeah.
And University of London or Western, they had done a study and say, those games don't do anything for your brain in the sense of helping it, because all they do is get you better at playing that game. Even crosswords, they'll say, you've got really good at crosswords, but it doesn't mean that you're stimulating your brain the way you need to. So it comes down to what kinds of things can we do? And that's where we have to, that's where we're trying to get people to think differently, to realize that you've got 20 years of possible to learn new things, get excited about new things. If you look at in Japan, they have a term, ikigai. Some people say ikigai. But it really just translates into the reason to get up in the morning. Mm-hmm. And during those aging years, the retirement years, we can find so many reasons not to be getting out of bed or not to be doing anything substantial. We just kind of get up, do our thing. Maybe my body hurts a little bit because I haven't been taking care of myself. Maybe I'm feeling a little dragged down because I haven't been taking the right nutrition in. Maybe I'm just thinking, well, what's the point?
Right.
What am I going to do today? But they always looked at it and said that, what is it that I like to do? What is it that I do well? And who would benefit from this? Mm-hmm. And all of those things become important when we start to look at ourselves saying, let's look at that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something I learned through my career, or maybe it's something that I've just been good at, that I'm good at helping other people understand new subjects. I'm good at teaching French, even though I never taught French. All of those things give people reason to learn more and to be engaged and get up. And that's what the difference is. They don't even have a word in Japan for retirement. Mm-hmm. You're not expected to.
Right. So now let me ask you this, because in a lot of I don't know about a lot, but in, you know, retirement communities or villages, a lot of it, I mean, I think a lot of it is fantastic, right? Because it provides the opportunity for people who might otherwise not meet new people to meet new people who are in similar life situations to them and who might, you know, become friends or, whatever it is. And so there's a great opportunity to socialize and to be active and to do things, and many of the places offer all sorts of like activities and sports and you know, whatever it is, like communal meals. I mean, never mind COVID, but just in general, like communal meals and ways to bring people together to keep that stimulation going, right? But I think what you're saying is that there's a level beyond that. I mean, you weren't talking about that, but you were saying that, you know, the apps on your phone and the games you play, like, they're also very isolating, which I think is a problem. You know, a lot of, because you're just playing it by yourself. And even if you're playing with someone, like, on the other end of a phone or a screen, but you don't know the person, like, it's not engaging. I mean, it's somewhat better, I suppose, than playing a computer, but nevertheless, it's not the same as like a social interaction or even getting together to play cards, right? Like, I think that's it's a wonderful activity for people because you get the social contact, you have conversation with people, and there's something for you to do, you know, which kind of like is a good reason to keep doing it a couple times a week or every week or whatever it is. And so there's that level of like finding the opportunity for yourself to, you know, do new things and meet new people and figure out how to keep that stimulation going, right? And how to start thinking about designing, quote unquote, designing your future, you know, however long it is. Like, it doesn't matter. Even if you don't know, it's like, well, I might as well spend the rest of the time that I have doing things that bring joy to the world, to me and to other people. Right.
It's funny when you talk about that. There was the strangest. I heard this oncologist being interviewed, and he said one of the things he discovered about his patients were that people came to him after he told them they're going to die and thanked him. Mm-hmm. Because they realized they had short periods of time, so they put so much more in their lives. And yet we don't do that on a regular basis. We have that opportunity. It's you know, that loneliness is happening to so many people, and particularly with the pandemic. So we look at something and that it is, as some people have said, it is greater risk to your mortality. Loneliness is a greater risk to your mortality than cigarettes. Yeah. That's a shocking thing to think about. But people, I mean, some of it is that because we've worked and we have engaged with people we knew from work, so that became a way of getting to know other people, because in some cases we didn't have a choice. They were around us all the time. Yeah. And we got to know things about them. But when that stops, and things like the pandemic had hit, people don't know where to go because they haven't been very good at creating relationships. And relationships are so important because it gives us a place to engage with people. It gives us people that we can trust with our emotions. So particularly as we're aging, because we're feeling different things and trying to understand them, and somebody we can relate to. But we don't tend to do a very good job of it. And one of the ways we can do that is that the phrase that I was using, authentic and gray. What is so critical for us in that discovery process of who we are and what we can do is to be authentic. Authentic just means, in a way, that I'm going to be exactly who I am.
Yeah.
So I don't have to put any mask on. I'm open to discussion. I'm not going to be judgmental. I don't want you to judge me. So if I can establish authentic relationships, they're so much stronger, because when I pick up the phone, I'm going to have a discussion that's going to go beyond, well, how many cases of COVID there were in Peel today, or in York yesterday, or how many people are getting vaccinated. And the majority of conversation is talking about what's happening around us and not getting any meaning out of that conversation.
Yeah. So let's talk about ancient Egypt.
We can have deeper conversations.
Yeah. For sure. Talk about archaeology, ancient Egypt, or the Greeks, you know, have some stimulating conversation. I mean, on and on about the, you're right. Sorry, go ahead.
It's like, to some degree, it's a friend of mine. I was having a conversation a couple of weeks ago, and he just found out he's got Parkinson's. Kind of shocked me. But during that conversation, I learned, and I've known this person for over 35 years, that he was always interested in woodworking. Mm-hmm. We just never discussed it. But part of what happened in it, because of our relationship, I remembered about this guy named John Pepper in South Africa, who has written a book about overcoming Parkinson's disease. He's done some incredible things. My friend had never heard of him. Then I ran across something in another book about a company in California that's creating video games for therapeutic purposes. Because again, it stimulates the mind. That helps people with things like ADHD and Parkinson's. But because we have that authentic relationship and talk about these kind of things, I'm now engaged trying to help him.
Right. Everybody wants.
That's the kind of stuff we need to be doing. We need to be open and excited about new possibilities. They may not always take us exactly where we want to go, but that's what we should be doing.
Mm-hmm. And that authenticity is important because that's, as you say, like that's when you can open up to people and get to know someone, and that's when you can discuss, you know, a pretty intense diagnosis or something happening in your life, and then you'll come along and make a suggestion, and that could like completely transform everything. And that would only have happened if, you know, he had said something and opened up and that you guys had had that relationship. But otherwise, you're kind of just left to your own devices for the most part. But it's super important.
It's all about, I mean, some of this thing all comes down to is that as individuals, as a couple, as a family, we become more mindful of what is going on around our lives. Because in a book called Growing Young, the author Marta Zarek talks about how mindfulness holds back aging. So a lot of what we're doing is not only looking at finding purpose, it's doing things that will age differently, will age more slowly. So, you know, they'll say that for a lot of people that are retired and aging, the last 9 or 10 years of their lives could be dealing with diseases, physical restrictions, all kinds of things that maybe if we took more control over it and more purpose around it, we could slow that down. I may do some things that will never stop me from getting Alzheimer's, but it may delay it for a number of years. Right. Or I may not feel the whole impact of it. So we're trying to look at ourselves as a whole being and saying, how do I go through life feeling good, having purpose, you know, that I can get up and I'm going to reduce the restrictions that I have on myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's also the mindfulness is, I mean, it's huge, right? In terms of everything, but it also helps redefine, I suppose, or it gives you a different view on the situations. So, you know, as you're saying, like in the last decade of your life or something, where the body starts to decay inevitably as it does, whether you're, you know, 80 or 100 or 150, like there's a point that that's going to happen. But what that means to you is up for grabs, kind of. And you can, it means different things to different people. And, you know, for some people, as we had spoken about previously, they were given a cancer diagnosis and they were like, this is the best news that I've ever gotten because I suddenly have realized what's important in my life and what's real and what's meaningful. And I just want to spend the rest of the time that I have, however long that is, just doing those things and, you know, finding and just being with family and friends. And that usually is the answer. But it's great when that does happen. It doesn't happen to everyone, unfortunately, but I think there's a choice that people can make to lean on that.
Some of it is that even some people will have ailments that to a large degree disable them. And there's other people like John Pepper with Parkinson where it hasn't disabled him. because he's fought against it. It's you know, we talked the other day about what is it that Dylan Thomas said, do not go gently into that good night. Old age should burn in rage at close of day. Rage against the dying light. Keep the light burning as bright and as long as you can through the passion of being you. And that's really what I'm talking about. It's all about that passion for who I am. I may take me a while to discover it, and there's things that we can do to help you get there. But that's the passion that when we're raging against things, we don't notice them as much.
Right.
We've got a purpose. So yeah, maybe my back hurts, I have trouble with arthritis. But it doesn't mean I've stopped living. I've stopped wanting to do. There's so many people that just amaze me what they've dealt with because they still have a passion in their lives.
Yeah.
And it's harder when you don't know who you are.
Yeah. I mean, like the obvious example for me is Stephen Hawking, right? I mean, he had arguably one of the worst diagnoses that you can get, and he was told he had 2 years to live, and he ended up doing 60 something odd years and, you know, becoming a master of the space universe and just unbelievable amounts of things. And I read in an interview that he did once when someone asked him about his life, what he said was, "Who could ask for more?" Right?
Wow.
And it was really profound because it was the recognition of he's, you know, found what's meaningful and purposeful to him, and he's doing it despite every limitation against him. And it's totally profound when people are able to do that and, you know, not let whatever it is stop them from raging or, you know, keep going, like despite any challenge that comes up your way. It's important to just keep going.
I think it's even, and one of the things that I see happening is that people will talk about ageism.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I had somebody say that to me recently, that they knew somebody was having difficulty getting a job because they're now in their late 50s and people didn't want to hire them. Well, there's also, we do it to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We look at ourselves and say, well, I'm 72, so I can only do so much. I'm 83, I can only do this. No, right. You're so much more capable. I mean, there's a woman that started becoming an athlete at 75 years old, never done anything in her life, you know, and set world records.
Right.
In sports that she never even dreamed.
Yeah, incredible.
There's never a time that we can stop being somebody or accomplishing something. It's just that we start to, because of age, start to put limitations on ourselves, and we should never do that. There's so many ways, you know, and we're just kind of brushing over a lot of them, that people can find purpose, people can, you know, find meaning, beat things that are holding them back at any age. And that's what we should all be doing.
Yeah, and just being authentic in gray,
that's
as
it.
You say. Well, listen, Russ, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you very much for coming on. And I look forward to, you know, chatting more with you in the future. Oh, and I'll put any like links to your website or anything like that, you know, in the descriptions afterwards if people are interested to find out
that.
More.
Shane,
all right.
Absolute pleasure. Just had a great time.
Thank you. I appreciate you coming on. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Bye.